ወገነተምን እንደስያ ዘናንና ስለካያ ቻክስስ ምልታን ዘይነተስ ማይሰይ ግሩበይነማ ስዊ ቻይታኒ ማኑግስ ታምስታፒተም ዘይነጉተላይ ሳያም ፈከራማን በደጥ ይሳፈናል ማን ሲከፈቱ ድስቻ ትክሽን ዘበይ ብቻ ትክሽናም ታብኒዶ ወልስ Shaky. Can't make a lot of noise with that. Otherwise, it's right into the corner. We're beginning the 20th chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And prior to this, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is engaging in his pastimes in Sri Vrindavan Dham in the summer season. For a person who is not trained in spiritual conceptualizations, into the corner. Everyone make all the noise they're going to make with their toys now. So, it's very difficult for a person who has materialistic conceptions, materially based conceptions, to understand the activities of Krishna. Because one would think, based on a material way of thinking, that the spiritual and material are antithetical, and it's true. But although they are opposite to each other, one basing his conceptions on the material frame of reference would think that everything that exists in the material realm doesn't exist in the spiritual realm. So therefore, because there are people in the material world, there are no people in the spiritual world. Because there are trees in the material world, there are activities in the material world, there are neither trees nor activities in the spiritual world. But when one properly understands the spiritual concepts in relationship to the material concepts, one understands that whatever exists in the material world is a reflection of that which exists in the spiritual world. And in one sense, that which exists in the material world has nothing to do, or that which exists in the material world, there is no counterpart on one sense. There is no, because in the spiritual world, because there is no matter, but there are spiritual counterparts. And none of the nebrieties of matter exist on the spiritual realm. And again, this spiritual world the material world is understood as a reflection of the spiritual world. The spiritual world is real. It is real. It is true existence. And the material world is a reflection of that, where everything is flickering and temporary, and everyone is trying to connect to it, to those other things that they see in the material world, but there is actually no connection. And therefore, everyone in the material world is inherently dissatisfied, quite miserable, and extremely frustrated, because that which they are longing for, simply that connection, that thing that is going to fulfill them, they cannot find that on the material platform, because everyone, is inherently spiritual. We are souls, we are eternal, we are spiritual. Mamaya vangso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana chatra gya kya tata para. We are Krishna's, as Krishna is spiritual, as the absolute truth is spiritual, so similarly we are his part. Mama eva angsa jiva loke, the jivas, the living entities in this world, certainly Krishna's part, spiritual, because Krishna is spiritual. We are not of the material world. And therefore, our attempts for happiness in the material world, in the reflected world, just simply causes a frustration. And the attempt to spiritualize our existence by negating the material world is also another cause of frustration. If we just think that because material activities and material personality causes me and everyone else so much misery, therefore I should slow my mind down and stop thinking and rid myself of a full sense of self. And I was looking at one really old-fashioned Advaita Mayavadi impersonalist book today, and it was about surrender. It was quite the beginning. The title was a bit interesting. It was about surrender as the source of happiness, and it was very. There were some very good arguments for the non-material existence of God. But right in the very, very end, the conclusion in the last three sentences, and he didn't fully show his hand until those sentences, was that we are all God. We are all Bhagawan. We cannot say that God is he or she, but God, the Absolute, is it. And we are all that. Tattvamasi, we are all that truth. Which is absurd. Obviously, if one looks at it from a very simple point of view. Are we all God? Are you God? Are you controlling the universe? Jason? Because I have some complaints to make if you are. If it's all your fault. And everyone right there, send Jason an email with their suggestions for improvement. No, we are not God. We are not the Supreme. Obviously, how could the impersonalist say that the Supreme for pleasure? He takes on, he has his different leelas, his different pastimes in this world. He takes on the form of a cat and a dog and a suffering human being in Daridra Narayan, the poor Narayan and the rich Narayan and the giraffe Narayan and the mosquito Narayan. Everything is God, but how absurd is if he cannot find pleasure in any other, as if he could not find pleasure in any other way except taking on suffering in the material world and placing himself into illusion, and he cannot find any other source of happiness. This is the fate of the jivas, the tiny, insignificant parts and parcels of Krishna, but not of the Lord himself. So what does the Lord do for pleasure? What are the activities of the Supreme Lord in the spiritual realm? And where should we long to go, wishing to free ourselves from the frustration of trying to find happiness in the material realm? This is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the 10th canto. And what we've just read is Krishna's pastime in the summer season when he was herding the cows with Balaram and the other cowherd boys. And he had just, in the last two chapters, it describes how Balaram kills Pralambasura. And then Krishna's evoking some of his divine opulence. He swallows a forest fire. And now the season is about to change. The definition of the spiritual world is that everything and everyone is harmonious in wishing to serve Krishna with great, great love and devotion. He is the central object. In the material world, bewildered in illusion, we are trying to center existence around us, ourselves, each individual. Is trying to organize the material world around himself and his own pleasure. And the result of that, as we have mentioned, of that impossible task, is suffering. But in the spiritual world, everything is organized around Krishna's pleasure. And Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. And his And everything is, everyone and everything is trying to serve him. And what is he doing? What is he doing? Is he just sitting there back, sitting back and trying to, accepting everyone's worship and trying to be the supreme enjoyer? Your job is all to make me enjoy. My job is to enjoy. I am a transcendental dictator. No, it is not like that. Krishna's pleasure is to serve his devotees. That is why he is the supreme enjoyer. He loves his pleasure, his happiness is serving all those with great love. He serves them, and with great love they serve him. This is the spiritual world, and the material world is just the opposite. No love, no true service, no but lust and exploitation, and therefore the material world is defined as dukkhalayama shashvatam anitya sukhaloka, place of suffering. The spiritual world, this chapter, chapter 20, is entitled The Rainy Season in Autumn in Vrindavan, and it describes how the beautiful setting of Vrindavan in this, first the rainy season. There will be 24 verses on the rainy season, and the way that they're described by Sukadeva Goswami in the rainy season is, most of them have analogies in them, philosophical analogies in the description of the rainy season. Some of these are positive that we should follow, and some of them are negative which we should not follow. So we'll read first the first few verses and read some of the commentaries of the acharyas. Sukadev Goswami said, Tayostar Adbhutam Karma Davagnir Mokshamatmana Gopastri Vyasamachayu Pralambhavadame Vacha. Sukadev Goswami said, as he was speaking to Maharaj Cricket and describing these wonderful pastimes of Krishna, to the ladies of Vrindavan, because the last verse was that Gopinam Paramananda Sid Govinda Darsane Chanam Yujasatam Iva Yasamena Vina Bhava, describing the great ecstasy of the ladies of Vrindavan who love Krishna fully. So Sukadeva Goswami said, to the ladies of Vrindavan, the coward boys then related in full detail Krishna and Balaram's wonderful activities, his Adbhuta Karma. The wonderful activities Krishna Balaram performed, they were with him all day long. This is the perfection, to be with Krishna. They were with him continuously. And those residents of Vrindavan who were not with Krishna, what did they want? As soon as Krishna returned with the coward boys, they wanted to hear, what did Krishna do today? What wonderful Adbhuta Karma, what wonderful activities did Krishna perform? Why did they want to hear? Because this is the pleasure of the ear, to hear about Krishna. And they had great love of Krishna. And the cowherd boys spoke of Krishna's activities, which were all wonderful. They spoke of them with great love. And the cowherd damsels, the ladies, heard them with great love. So the boys then related in full detail Krishna and Balaram's wonderful activities of delivering them from the forest fire and killing the demon Pralamba. Devagni mokshamatmana gopya striya samachayu Pralamba vadam. Killing a Pralambasaur is mentioned second, and the saving them from the Devagni, the blazing forest fire, is mentioned first. And we just heard about that in the last two chapters. In this verse, there's a comment by Sanatana Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Sanatana Goswami says, these comments are mostly short. Even though these activities were performed separately by Sri Ram and Krishna, with the idea that the two of them rendered each other assistance, they're indicated together, or else the respective activities of Krishna, namely the deliverance from the forest fire, and Rama, namely the killing of Pralamba, should be distinguished in sequence, dividing them up into two. So they did that in the text. Adbhutam means wonderful. Because of their being super worldly, beyond anything a human being could do. They are manifested. These activities were manifestations of Krishna's Naralila, his inconceivably acting. Most of his activities were manifestations of his Naralila, acting as if in a common way. But then Krishna would perform. Activities that it was superhuman as well, such as this killing of Pralambasura by Balaram and the swallowing of the forest fire. So, Adbhutam, because of being superworldly to the women, Suryasoda and the others, because of their special affection and so on, by the word cha, and, is indicated that also Sri Nanda and his associates, they proclaimed it fully in all its different details. So this is what Vrindavan is like. There are activities of Krishna, and then everyone is interested in talking about Krishna and hearing about Krishna. Everyone's consciousness is absorbed in Krishna. Krishna only, and it is not forced. It is simply out of love. And the material world, everyone's consciousness is absorbed in what? Me, 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 me. And the result is misery. And in the spiritual world, by absorbing one's consciousness with devotion in Krishna, the result is transcendental ecstasy. It is fully natural for the soul to hear about Krishna, to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. This is the sarup, the actual form of the living entity. And these, in the pastimes of Krishna, they are extraordinary. And so they're extraordinary in the sense of superhuman as described here, but extraordinary in a different sense, that they're composed of spiritual energy. And hearing about them is also composed of spiritual energy. Speaking them is composed of spiritual energy. It is a different energy altogether, and that energy is uplifting. And to stay always within the shelter of that internal energy, that spiritual energy, is the goal for every person, every living entity, to somehow remain in the shelter of the spiritual energy. Now we have the living entities are called tatastha, or marginal. Borderline. We can take shelter of the material energy, or we can take shelter of the spiritual energy. Or rather, we can desire and move in the direction of taking shelter of the spiritual energy. It's not so simple, just I'm going to take shelter of the spiritual energy. I'm going to become absorbed in Krishna consciousness continuously. It is not so simple, because we want to take with us into that spiritual atmosphere our whole self-centered false ego. That is the tendency. And control and be the enjoyer and the controller. And it doesn't work. We cannot enter the spiritual world until we are purified of those tendencies. We cannot enter the spiritual realm until we actually love Krishna and wish to please Him. So, the associates in Vrindavan, the associates of Krishna, because of their special affection, everyone, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, everyone was simply absorbed in Krishna consciousness. They mention the forest fire first in the text, before Balaram's killing of Pralambasura, because the activity of delivering them from the forest fire was very great, and it especially because it involved their own deliverance. That's the simple comment of Sanatana Goswami. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, everything is very natural there. To enhance the portrayal of Sri Krishna's pastimes, Sukadeva Goswami describes the beauty of the monsoon and autumn seasons in Braja in this chapter. In metaphorical terms, he depicts the wonderful qualities of the skies, the sky, the rivers, and the forest. Text 2. Gopavridascha gopyascha tarupakarnya vishmitaha menere deva pravaro krishna ramo vrajangato. The elder cowherd men and ladies were amazed to hear this account of how Balaram was kidnapped by Pralambasura, and Balaram killed him with just the striking of his fist, and then how Krishna and the cows and all the boys were surrounded by the forest fire, and Krishna performing his Adbhutakaranam, he swallowed that forest fire and immediately transported the boys to Bandiravan under the cooling shade of that tree in Bandiravan. So the cowherd men and ladies were amazed to hear this account. And they concluded that Krishna and Balaram must be exalted demigods who had appeared in Vrindavan. Sanatana Goswami comments. Upa, in the word upakanya, tarupakanya vismita. Upakanya means hearing. It was vismita means surprise. Mirere, they considered deva pararo. That these two, Krishna and Balaram, must be powerful demigods, superhuman beings, because they're always performing these incredible activities. So it means in the proximity of these two, Sanatana Goswami says, they heard this in the proximity near Krishna and Balaram, or else in a whispered voice, everyone was talking. Krishna did this and Balaram did this. Did you hear how Krishna, he swallowed the forest fire? So they considered them the two chief demigods, namely Sri Vishnu and Shiva, who arrived at Braja, and they accepted birth because of the special devotion on the parts of their devotees, the Brajbasis. That's what they were thinking. And they have taken their birth personally, manifesting themselves by their mercy. They could not conceive, because of the depth of their love, it would not allow them to conceive Krishna and Balaram as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, they thought, oh, they must be some demigods. How wonderful. They're just powerful persons. And in a previous purport, the cowherd boys, it describes one of the acharyas that described the cowherd boys as thinking, Krishna and Balaram must be demigods. But we are with them, playing with them, so we must be demigods also. They could not conceive of their actual position, nor could they conceive of the position of Krishna. And rather than thinking their births are like ordinary beings, they should be offered worship out of love, comprising their own sense of being intimate relatives and so on. Or else, as the two of them are just like two most eminent demigods, they will always give protection to us. Those who are elder amongst the cowherd men, such as Nanda and Upananda, are stating this to the young cowherds. Even during the early childhood of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just like grown-up youths, they were attached to enjoying sports. And in the association of him, Krishna, they went to play in the forest. Or else, because of the youthful cowherd boys and also the cowherd girls who have a special affectionate mellow with him, are always fully aware of the exceptional glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, they are not astonished, the gopis are not astonished, and they are not mentioned here because they are understood to be accompanying the elder cowherd men. The cowherd ladies mentioned here to be understood to be the elderly gopis. So the younger gopis, they were never astonished by Krishna's activities. So because those gopis that are spoken of here are astonished, the conclusion is that they are the elderly gopis and they're speaking to the cowherd men. Because if someone becomes astonished, this person is so powerful. If there's an extremely powerful person, and if one begins to think of the power of that person, and their relationship becomes based on the power of the person, then the intimacy of the relationship, the one-to-one equality of the love of the relationship would be shattered. So therefore, the Krishna's activities The gopis, their love was so intimate with Krishna, the younger gopis, that they could not be pulled out of that, of the intimacy of their love by Krishna's adbhuta karmanam, his wonderful, extraordinary activities. So the point is in glorification of the young coward damsels of Prajna. In their becoming fully aware of the glories of Krishna, there is no diminution of the ecstatic love of those who are most dear to him, but rather it causes an increase of love indicated previously. Comments. After hearing about the extraordinary feats of Krishna and Balaram, the elderly Vrijbasis thought they were two eminent demigods. Due to their strong bond of love, they never thought Krishna and Balaram were God. These exploits simply nourished the sweetness of their relationship even more. It is not stated anywhere that their vatsalya bhava, the parental love, ever decreased a bit. This would have happened, however, if they thought the two boys were gods. So instead they considered him demigods. Them demigods. And now it begins the description of the rainy season, the third verse. Then the rainy season began, because after the summer season, the hot season, what is it called? Grishakal?
Grishma.
Huh?
Grishma.
Grishma? Bengali is Grisha. Then the rainy season began. So after the very, very hot season, right now it's just on the borderline between the hot season and the rainy season in India and in Vrindavan. Have the first rains come to Vrindavan yet? I think not.
Oh, rain yesterday, it's 46 degrees.
46 degrees only.
Wow.
And very humid now. In Delhi it was humid today. At 8:30 in the morning, it was 36 degrees. Then the rainy season began, giving life and sustenance to all living beings. The sky began to rumble with thunder. So after the hot season, just now the monsoons start coming and the rainy season starts coming. And it's such a, what's the word?
Relief,
yes. It's such a relief. The sky began to rumble with thunder and lightning flashed on the horizon. That's the third verse. Sanatana Goswami comments. So the next, this in the next 22 texts will describe the rainy season in this way with metaphors. Positive and negative. So Sanatana Goswami has a short comment here. I'll read part of it. In order to describe the pastimes of the Supreme Lord during the rainy season and at autumn, have now arrived in sequence. With the idea. So after the rainy season comes the autumn. After the rainy season comes the hot season, what they call the Indian summer. I don't know what the... when it becomes hot again, but not rainy, and then it cools down, it becomes autumn. What's the name of that season? The six seasons in Vrindavan. Huh? After the monsoon season, there's another hot season, the one that comes in September. Is there a special name for that one?
Autumn.
Before the autumn. The dewy season. No? They also call it Indian summer. Which means,
hot again.
Huh? It's hot again. Very hot again, you can say, but not quite at 46, but it's very hot. So, in order to describe the pastimes of the Supreme Lord during the rainy season and the autumn, which will now arrive in sequence, with the idea by the manifestation of the beauty of the rainy season and the autumn in Vrindavan, the two supreme lords will engage in special pastimes. Thus these two seasons are described, beginning with the verse that starts Tataha, which is this third verse, Tataha Pravartita Pravrit. And this will continue to the end of the chapter. This is what Sanatana Goswami says. Text 4. The sky, this is what the rainy season was like. The sky was then covered by dense bluish clouds accompanied by lightning and thunder. Thus the sky and its natural illumination were covered in the same way. Thus the sky and its natural illumination were covered in the same way that the spirit soul is covered by the three modes of material nature. So that the sky is naturally blue and illumined. But in the rainy season, again, this is a description of Vrindavan, in the rainy season, and there are metaphors used. So just as the sky is naturally blue, but when it's covered by the clouds and the lightning and the thunder, its natural illumination, its brightness is covered. And what is the comparison given here? In the same way that the spirit soul, the natural, blissful, ecstatic, eternal, and full of knowledge nature of every soul is covered, the illumined consciousness of the soul is covered by the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. The natural consciousness of everyone is blissful, it is eternal, it is full of knowledge. Just as the sky is naturally blue, and it is naturally bright, illuminating. But the consciousness of the living, of every living entity becomes covered by goodness, passion, ignorance, filled with so many desires, covered, and therefore the basis of the three modes of material nature is false ego, which is based on a desire to, I want to enjoy, I want to exploit. I want to manipulate the material energy for my pleasure. And then when one desires that, one desires to enjoy in that way, rather than capturing pleasure, we are captured by the illusory energy of Maya, Krishna's Maya Shakti. We are captured by that. And as a person is bound by a rope, and a rope is composed of three strands, woven with three strands. So similarly, the three strands of the material nature, based on our desire to exploit the material nature, that bind us. The three strands are goodness, passion, and ignorance. And they are like whips. They force us, push us, push us, push us, push us. And the reason, push us, to want to enjoy, but the result is no enjoyment, it is suffering. Here is the short purport to this verse. Lightning is compared to the mode of goodness, thunder to the mode of passion, and clouds to the mode of ignorance. Thus the cloudy sky at the onset of the rainy season is analogous to the pure spirit soul when he becomes disturbed by the modes of nature. For that time he is covered, and his original brilliant nature is only dimly reflected through the haze of the material qualities. There is consciousness. Everyone exhibits consciousness. That is the. But how much consciousness one exhibits, or doesn't exhibit, is dependent upon the different configuration of the modes of material nature that cover one. So when one is a good person who is quite pure, and the description of the effects and how to develop one or another of the different modes of material nature is given in the Bhagavad Gita and the Uddhava Gita and the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Whatever we do, whatever we eat, where we live, could you open the door please? All these things affect us, affect our consciousness. And either add to the covering or over our consciousness or diminish it. And when a thick monsoon cloud is compared to the haze of over covering the consciousness of the mode of ignorance. What are the symptoms of the mode of ignorance? That is, the covering is very, very thick, and very little of the actual illuminated consciousness of the soul is manifest. What is it? What are the symptoms of that? Huh? Delusion. Laziness. Sleep. Indolence. Sleep. Intoxication. Just and eating food in the mode of ignorance. Decomposed items. Nothing fresh. I remember it. Huh? Yes, symptoms of speech in the mode of ignorance. Expert. And insulting others too. Causing others pain, getting pleasure in that. Ignorant things. And the result of ignorant activities is deeper and darker ignorance. The result of the of what are symptoms of the mode of passion? Intense desire. I want. And the more one tries to fulfill one's desires, the more one's list increases. It is not that if one fulfills one's list of all the things I want, that you check them off. Well, there's four on my list at this minute. I check them off and now I have nothing on my list and I will stay clean. No, immediately, as soon as you check off four, there's another 12 that take its place. Intense hankering, foods in the mode of passion, hot, spicy. What else is symptomatic in the mode of passion? Desire, huh? Over endeavor. And you're so tired with the mode of passion, whipping and beating, more, do more, 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 get more, achieve more. And then you'll be happy, and then you'll be secure, and then you'll be safe, and then, and it's always somewhere else, and only if, and there's not a moment of rest. The mode of passion beats one. And the mode of goodness, symptoms?
Knowledge.
Sattvam, sandhayate, jnanam, knowledge. You can see things in the right perspective. Foods in the mode of goodness. Fresh. I'm getting hungry. I remember when we used to live in Hong Kong, they had something, a delicacy there was something that they called, I think it was 4,000-year-old eggs. And I once saw one fellow in a market. He was gathering a crowd. He was selling something. He was a strong, rough-looking fellow. And he stood there. And he was screaming. And people were coming around. And then he put his hand in a basket. And he pulled out a cobra. And he was holding it by the neck. And he was... And suddenly he went... And he bit off its head. You never even saw that one, did you? It was wild. It was quite a crowd drawer, though. Don't try that, Jason. That is the mode of ignorance. Text 5. Astoma sanyapitam yad bhumyas chodam ayam basu swagobhya muktamare be parjanya kala agate. With its rays, the sun had for eight months drunk up the earth's wealth in the form of water. Now that the proper time had arrived, the sun began releasing this accumulated wealth. So the sun draws up the water, it stores it in the form of clouds, and then during the rainy season it releases it. Oh yes, by the way, we're supposed to develop the mode of goodness, by the way. Because the mode of goodness, the covering over the soul is thinner. it's still a covering because it tends to be proud. Mode of goodness is self-satisfied and proud and looking down on others. So that's the fault of the mode of goodness. And also one becomes attached to things of the mode of goodness, and attachment is born of passion. So from goodness comes, you become attached to it and proud, so therefore passion comes and ignorance comes. So Krishna consciousness, the basic lifestyle of Krishna consciousness is of the mode of goodness. And then when those things, as described in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, those things of the mode of goodness are offered in Krishna's service, then they become transcendental. And if one has elements every now and then of the mode of passion or even the mode of ignorance, gradually under direction and following the process of Krishna consciousness, these things are lessened with knowledge too. So this text says, with its rays, the sun had for 8 months drunk up the earth's wealth in the form of water. Now that the proper time had arrived, the sun began releasing this accumulated wealth in the form of its rains. Purport. The Acharyas compared the sun's evaporating the earth's wealth of water to a king's collecting taxes. In volume 1, chapter 20 of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada explains this analogy as follows. Clouds are accumulated water drawn from the clouds are accumulated water drawn from the land by the sunshine. Continually for 8 months, the sun evaporates all kinds of water from the surface of the globe. And this water is accumulated in the shape of clouds, which are distributed as water when there is need. Similarly, a government exacts various taxes from the citizens, which the citizens are able to pay by their different material activities, agriculture, trade, and industry. Thus, the government can also exact taxes in the form of income tax and sales tax. This is compared to the sun drawing water from the earth. Just as the sun draws water from the earth, it stores it in the clouds, similarly the government extracts taxes from the citizens and stores it in the form of, anyway, we'll hear more, their treasury. That's the simple way of understanding it right now. When there is again need of water on the surface of the globe, the same sunshine converts the water into clouds and distributes it all over the globe. Similarly, the taxes collected by the government must be distributed to the people as educational work, public work, sanitation work, and so on. This is essential for a good government. The government should not simply exact taxes for useless squandering. The tax collection should be utilized for the public welfare of the state. And as Prabhupada also says, maybe it's in the next, maybe it's in this one, he says that it should not be used, the taxes should not be used just to increase their salary, which is very often the case. Text 6. Tadidvanto mahamegas chandasvasanavepitaha praninam jivaram yasya mamuchu karuna iva. Flashing with lightning, great clouds were shaken and swept about by fierce winds. Just like merciful persons, the clouds gave their lives for the pleasure of this world. Purport. Just as great compassionate personalities sometimes give their lives or wealth for the happiness of society, the rain clouds poured down their rain upon the parched earth. Although the clouds were thus dissipated, they freely provided rainfall for the happiness of the earth. Very noble. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada comments as follows on this verse. During the rainy season, there are strong winds blustering all over the country and carrying clouds from one place to another to distribute water. When water is urgently needed after the summer season, the clouds are just like rich men who in times of need a rich man who in times of need distributes his money even by exhausting his own treasury. So the clouds exhaust themselves by distributing water all over the surface of the globe. Continues. When Maharaj Dasarath, the father of Lord Ramachandra, used to fight with his enemy, this is continued the quotation from the Krishna book, it was said that he approached them just like a farmer uprooting unnecessary plants and trees. And when there was need of giving charity, he used to distribute money exactly as the cloud distributes rain. The distribution of rain by clouds is so sumptuous that it is compared to the distribution of wealth by a great munificent person. The cloud's downpour is so sufficient that the rains even falls on rocks and hills and on the oceans and seas where there is no need for water. A cloud is like a charitable person who opens his treasury for distribution and does not discriminate whether the charity is needed or not. He gives in charity open-handedly. Metaphorically speaking, that's the end of Prabhupada's, the quotation from Prabhupada. Metaphorically speaking, the lightning and rain clouds is the light by which they see the distressed condition of the earth. And the blowing winds are their heavy breathing, such as found in a distressed person. Distressed to see the condition of the earth, the clouds tremble in the wind like a compassionate person. Thus they pour down their rain. So this is the nature of someone who has a good-hearted person, is that he cannot tolerate to see the suffering, the distressed of another. And even if it causes him some difficulty, he will act to relieve that distress. There's an old story of one sadhu who was walking by a big pool of water, and he saw a scorpion. He was walking with his friend. He saw a scorpion in the water, drowning. So he didn't have anything, so he picked up the scorpion with his hand, and it bit him. And he put it down, and he kept on walking. Then, further down the road, he saw another big body of water with another scorpion drowning in it. So what do you think he did? He went over there, he had nothing. So he picked up the scorpion in his hand to take it out, and the scorpion bit him. Incredibly painful. He put it down. He kept on walking. And his friend said to him, Why did you do that? He did it the first time he bit you. You didn't become angry. You just put him down. Okay, that's somewhat understandable. But then you did it a second time. You didn't become angry. You became pained. Didn't kill him or anything. And then you put him down and kept on walking. And probably, if we see another time, you probably do it again. Why is this? What is your thinking? And he said, I didn't become angry. It's because he was just acting according to his nature. And so was I. So, I'm not necessarily supposed to follow that example, but this is the goodness of the heart of a holy person, a sadhu, that his nature, his very nature is to help others. And similarly, the scorpion, his very nature is to sting others, to cause trouble to others. Even someone who's helping him. Sometimes we find we're a mixture of these different qualities. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes. What verse is this? This is explaining it on a different level, on a very practical, observable level that we can see. The sun, it is clearly the sun that collects the water, yes? By the process of evaporation. So Indra's business is to direct the clouds. Cooperation between the elements the demigods between Surya and Indra. They work cooperatively. They are suras. It's like saying, there's different departments in the government. One department collects the taxes, and the other makes up the budget. Another department distributes them to here, and this one does this, and this one gets this amount, and this one gets this amount. So they're part of the same government, universal government. But this is just describing it from the point of what we see, the natural viewpoint. Is that right? Any other questions or comments? They say what? They have predominance of goodness though, but they certainly have passion, some ignorance too. We see that they become angry. We read how Indra became angry. He feels very threatened. As soon as one has a position, that's the wonderful thing, truly about. Ultimately about spiritual life, that one's position on the spiritual level is measured by what? Surrender. And that brings forth humility and a serving mood. So you can't get envious of someone who just wants to serve everyone. You can get envious of someone who has a big position, who has so much wealth, and everyone is glorifying him. But in spiritual life, that person, ideally, is in that position because of his serving mood and his humility. So if you want, when envy means that you want to have what the person has, so if you want his serving mood, you can have it. And if you want to be humble, you can just do it. There's nothing stopping you. So there's no use. So that's why it doesn't fit into spiritual life, envy. Because it's available for everyone. There's nothing stopping one from taking it. Say if I have so much wealth and you want my wealth, there's so many things stopping you from taking it. There's the law, there's my alarm system. But someone whose wealth is their devotion and their mood to serve others and their humility, there's nothing stopping you from plundering it and taking it yourself, except you realize you don't want it. And then there's nothing to be envious of. There's something to lament about. You follow what I mean? But it's serving mood. The essence of it is a serving mood and humility. You can't have exalted qualities without that. So if you want a serving mood by which a person is elevated, then take it. Do you understand what I mean? What stops us from taking it? What stops us from taking somebody's wealth? There's so many things. But what stops us from... It's so many things external to us. But what stops us from having a serving mood? Is it something external to us or something internal? So therefore, no one to complain to, no one to be envious of in spiritual life. because it's only the problems are all inside, they're not external. We don't blame anyone. Follow what I mean? Oh, maybe it didn't. What did you say it again? We'll try again then. I derailed you, but you can't find it. But what does that have to do? Is the question specifically? There's two questions there. Who's a demigod in this room? One of us might be secretly. One way you could tell is that demigods, their feet don't touch the ground. But then again, we're all wearing socks. So that doesn't work quite. But on another level, everyone's been everything. We've all been rich men, poor men, beggar men, thieves, the whole thing, murderers, exalted persons, this and that, at one time or another. Yeah. That's one way to look at it.
Yeah. But also,
but there are other ways to look at it.
I just read that
so that's a question for Bhanu Swami, because he was the one who made the statement. That wasn't me, that was Bhanu Swami. Got the tracks mixed. That's a comment that he makes. It's not a comment that I make. By Uttama Bhakti. But what the point that Bhanu Swami was making is that pure devotional service is always pure. It's like the holy name is always pure. You cannot contaminate the holy name by your offensive nature, not you particularly. So Uttama Bhakti is always pure. So if you're practicing Uttama Bhakti, whatever Uttama Bhakti you're doing, you're chanting Krishna's names or whatever, you're touching Uttama Bhakti regardless of your contaminated consciousness. That's the point that he's making. Well, I can't speak for everyone. I can speak for me. The way... It depends. He was trying to make a particular point.
Yeah.
But it's not a point that I don't usually make. Personally, I don't usually make that point. I usually take the point of view of that we don't allow the perfection of these things to manifest because of our mixed nature. So there are so many different categories of practitioners of bhakti yoga. So one who is practiced, one who is not yet pure, he's not performing pure devotional service purely, he's usually categorized as either Kanista Madhyam or Madhyam. You can say that Uttama Bhakta, as described by Rupa Goswami, is one who's on the bhava level, where he's taken shelter of the internal energy, he's pure. That's another way to describe it. Yeah, and prema bhakti, but it's late already. Srimad Bhagavatam, these days it's over.